The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the iconic Free Library of Philadelphia. No surprise, there's a packed house tonight. As Monique mentioned, I'm Delilah Wilson-Scott, Executive Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer at Comcast, proud supporter of the library, and of course, it's a mission to advance literacy, guide learning, and inspire curiosity. I think for those of us who've been on the journey, it's been awesome to witness the evolution of the Free Library's author event series. Starting from a small offering of lectures here and there to a robust lineup of events with acclaimed novelists, historians, public figures, and innovators like the one we have for you tonight. It's content that connects us, inspires us, and challenges us, addressing some of the timely issues that all of us are experiencing in the public, civic, and humanity spheres over the past 30 years. And through in-person events like this one, right here in this auditorium, and online archives of podcasts and video, this series, the author events, reaches millions of people worldwide. This makes the series the single largest provider of digital content produced and distributed by the Free Library of Philadelphia. So I want to also thank the members that are here tonight. I myself am a member of Pepper Society, and I encourage those of you who haven't joined as yet to please join in supporting the library through membership and beyond. This is an incredible treasure we have here in our city, and this is but one program that is definitely emblematic of what this library brings to all of us. So thank you for the generous support that all of you provide. So Kara Swisher is an award-winning journalist who has covered the business of the internet since 1994. So over the past 30 years, and those of you who listen to her podcast know that she's been challenging and holding many tech moguls to task, quite frankly, and has a very unique interviewing style that I think all of us admire. She's the host of podcast On with Kara Swisher, as well as co-host of Pivot with Scott Galloway, and their dynamic is awesome. For those of you who have not listened to the podcast, sounds like we have a lot of fans in the room. Definitely check it out. It's very unique. And she's the co-founder and editor at large of Recode, host of the Recode Decode podcast, and the co-executive producer of the Code Conference. She's written for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Vanity Fair, Washington Post, and this new release, Burn Book, which she's going to talk about tonight, basically covers her decades of experience with Silicon Valley's most important figures, failures, and innovations. So those of you who have started to read the book, I'm excited to know which stories are going to come up tonight, because she has many of them. And so joining Kara on stage is, of course, author events, one of the most beloved interviewers, Philadelphia's own Tam Edwards. Tam is the anchor of 6ABC Action News right here in Philadelphia, the Morning Edition, and of course, co-host of Inside Story. So with no further ado, because I know we're all eager for what will be an awesome discussion, please join me in welcoming Kara Swisher and Tamla Edwards to the stage.
Hi, everybody. Here, I do this at every setting.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Kara Swisher made me tea. A good start for the evening. She's like, I'm a mother, I can't help it. So very excited to talk to you about Burn Book.
I'm excited
to talk
about it. I
love the book.
Thank you.
And I heard you say that, you know, it's a play on Mean Girls. What I found interesting is there's so much tech, and I'm sure people tried to get you to do like the traditional memoir.
They did.
Tell me my whole life story. Why did you say, I'm not doing that, I'm doing this?
I didn't want to do a memoir, actually. I wanted just to write about my years in tech, but it was very hard not to do it without writing about my own journey, mm-hmm. so people understood it. I don't really talk a lot about myself when I do stuff. Now I do on the podcast, because that's the way it is. But I didn't, you know, I was a beat reporter to start with, at first at the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, and I shifted into more of a columnist and I don't know what you would call it, but a commentator, I guess, but an expert one, because I did reporting the whole way through. And so I just wanted to write about my observations of what happened. And my editor, my first editor of my first book on AOL said, no, it has to be about you. Like, and I was very reluctantly put it in there. And every time I'd send him some pages, he's like, more cowbell. And I was, that was me. And I was like, all right. And I put it in. And so I actually got someone who helped me, Nell Scovell, who's amazing, to see kind of like, it's not a book doctor precisely, because I wrote it. Some people write books for people and everything else. But she really understood the narrative and created a narrative around it that was there. And she dragged it out of me.
And it's very much, you know, if you were there in the 7 days that the earth was made, this is what you would have
seen.
That's
right, that's right. And the one I said, the first quote in this is from Gatsby, Nick, you know, they were careless people, Tom and Daisy. And that's who I am. I'm Nick. That's who I am.
And you have a lot of careless people to talk about.
I do.
I've seen you asked, why are you so confident? And your response was like, well, why wouldn't anybody not be confident?
Right, right.
You talk about...
Yeah, it's always asked by men, I'm sorry to say. I have three sons, so I like men, but obviously, and one daughter. And I just, it's the question I get from my whole career and even on this book tour. You're uncommonly confident. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, it just, I don't even understand the question. Like, as if... Oh, you're not submissive like you're supposed to be. I guess that's the opposite, right? I don't.
But in the way that you do things, I mean, as somebody who listens to both, I listen to Sway, I now listen to On, best mm-hmm. intro music, I texted you
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Your questions are direct, they're quick, you don't take a paragraph, mm-hmm. you know what you know, and I think they enjoy talking to you
yes,
when people
they do.
Come on.
Yeah.
And it takes me back to something in the book where you said you knew you needed to get out of daily journalism because you didn't want to do the to be sure.
Yes,
like
to
you
be
knew
sure.
what you knew, and you wanted to say, "I know this." And in this time, especially, it reminded me of Christiane Amanpour saying,
truthful,
"We need
neutral.
To get away. We need to do truthful, not neutral."
I would agree.
And that seems to be your real estate. And why is it so hard, especially when we need it so most, for us to try being truthful, not neutral?
Well, I think truthful is the point. Like, you try to get to it. And one of the things I was doing, the to be sure thing she was talking about, is when I was at the Wall Street Journal, I was writing, I think it was WebVan, I believe it was WebVan, and I did all the reporting on it, and it was a disaster. And it wasn't a disastrous idea. It was an idea that wasn't ready, because they didn't have the elements that you now have with grocery delivery. But they didn't have a lot of things, and they had put too much money into it. They built all these warehouses. They overspent. And literally, I could do math, like, girl does math, and, oh, this math doesn't math, right, essentially. And so when I went back to write it, I said this in the story, like, this is going bad very fast. And it was after a string of these, like Cosmo.com. You don't remember it, but that was, remember? Yeah, you remember Cosmo.com. They deliver like a,
how many sex quizzes can you take?
I know, right, yeah. So I said, this is what I put what I thought in it based on my reporting, then used my reporting, and the editor said, you need to get someone else to say that, like what you just said. I said, why? I know it's the right way. And then they made me put in a to-be-sure statement, which is always the negative of, like, to be sure, some people think WebVan could be the biggest thing ever. And I was like, nobody thinks that, like, except the owners, because they're stupid. But it was really interesting. And so I got tired of it, and so I thought I would start my own media company, because then, instead of griping, I'm not a big griper, so I don't like griping. You know what I mean?
You like, just say, this is stupid, and you move on.
I leave. I was like, instead of thinking you're an idiot, I'm going to just leave your presence kind of thing.
And it's interesting because...
I do that a lot. I left something else relatively recently, and someone said, you don't leave this place, and I think you can guess where it was. And they said, why are you leaving? And I said, I just don't want to talk to you anymore. And they were like, what? And I said, that's really the truth. I don't know what else to say. So...
You leave the Post, you leave the Journal. Mm-hmm. One doesn't really understand what you're doing. The other treats you poorly as you do it well.
Yeah.
And the story seems to be the same over and over again in various different ways. People don't realize it's like guns, germs, and steel.
Right.
The tribe on the other side doesn't want to be your friend. They're coming to kill you.
Right, exactly.
So you watch it with the Post. They don't get it. The Journal doesn't get it. Tech companies don't get it.
Yeah.
And when people try to play catch up, even if they're in huge companies, they have a hard time,
especially media companies,
making the pivot.
Yeah.
Why, when you have so many smart people about so many smart things, is this so hard to predict or to do better?
Well, you're making the supposition that people who run media enterprises are smart. I am not. Yeah, as you know, like, you reporters are smart, but yeah, often the business people leave something to be desired. They're typically a demographic too, older and you know, whiter and maler, and they're not going to give up their thing. They just are. It's just, I'm not insulting. Again, it's just the way it is if you look at the numbers. And so they don't want to change the business they have. And many years ago, the smartest thing ever said to me by a media executive who's a fantastic media executive is Bob Iger, where he said he got into digital very early. And there were two people, Barry Diller and Bob Iger, that really saw it. And Barry's his own iconoclast, so he always is like that. Like, he always sort of shifts left when other people are shifting right. And he's smart that way. And he thinks about it. He doesn't just do it for... He's not contrary. You know the trend right now, contrarian for contrarian's sake, which is, like, idiotic, really. And Bob Iger said, if someone's going to eat our lunch, it might as well be us. He saw that they were there to eat your lunch. And so there's pain along the way, but most media companies or... / record companies / insurance companies, whatever. They like the business they're in, but they don't want to make that leap. And it's very hard for companies. Like Netflix did it. They were selling discs to people, right? And then one day he said, this is finished. We can't do this anymore. He shifted to digital, and the impact on his business was massive. Very few, this is Reed Hastings, very few executives would do that, right? Mm. He did it, and now they're Netflix. You know.
Other people would be Blockbuster still.
Yeah, Blockbuster.
To send
we're going to keep selling those things. You kids, forget about it. If there's kids here, we used to go get them and wander around the aisles and get Twizzlers. That's really what you did.
Speaking of kids, the way you describe, you spent a lot of time getting to know these people, drinking warm beer on a New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Because you say it's important to know from the top to the bottom and know them in many contexts.
Yeah.
And a lot of them start out using childishness almost as a badge of
childlike
armor.
That's what they call
an
it.
Armor.
I call it childish.
Childlike. Like,
yeah.
I can't be bad because I'm just out here trying to have
innocent.
Fun. You talk about a baby shower
the
where
Google
people
show.
Literally wearing diapers and suckers and drinking warm white
out
Russians
of bottles.
Out of yeah,
oh,
it
the
was
nipple.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But then in time,
there was an ice sculpture with white Russians coming out of the pregnant mother's. I don't even want to get into it, but you'll
it's
see.
So ridiculous. But a lot of these people...
And let me just say, it was just me and Gavin Newsom who didn't put on the outfits, so you should vote for him for president. On that alone.
But in time, as you talk about a lot of these people, you've pointed out parental, often father issues, victimhood mm-hmm. issues, and I have to read this paragraph and ask you to talk about it because it really sat with me. Most of all, the damaged ones shared one sad attribute. They all seemed achingly lonely. I came to realize that many tech titans' warped self-righteousness fueled them more than money, power, and the growing legions of obsequious enablers, the tongue bath people, mm-hmm. as you like to call them on the payroll. It inevitably curdled their souls, creating an arrogance that masked what was a deep self-hatred and anger. I've never seen a more powerful and rich group of people who saw themselves as victims so intensely, which is why by nature they insisted on reframing every failure and mistake they made as an asset, even when it was a failure and sometimes a very damaging mistake. That is such a strong word, a deep self-hatred. Why do they have a self-hatred? Why are they so mean in so many... When I think of Elon or Mark Andreessen...
Yeah, I was just saying, ladies
so
and gentlemen,
mean.
Elon Musk. Mark is not does not hate himself. That is not true about him. But some of them are like that. Elon is the classic example. That's who I was thinking of when I was writing that paragraph. You know, a lot of it comes, you know, look, we all have childhood pain. I write about my own, but I don't, like today, tweet incredibly racist things today, you know, or yesterday, anti-immigrant. I don't do that. Like, it manifests itself in their pain becoming our pain, right? We have to suffer the way they have. They're dramatic. Some of them are very dramatic people and narcissistic, no question. They're like deeply and malevolently narcissistic. And so what happens is as they get wealthier and wealthier, they have a germ of a great idea. They're so interesting from a risk perspective. And that's a great asset. But when they make a risk and they're successful, instead of understanding that part of it, like someone like Steve Jobs understood part of it was luck, part of it was him, part of it, you know, they didn't have any grounding so that it was all them, and they become godlike, like they think it's them, you know, there can be only me, that kind of thing. They're very steeped in video games and science fiction in a way that's well beyond just enjoyment. Like they think they're those players in those video games. And then on top of that, you learn on top of it enormous money, which really does warp people. It really truly does. I don't say I'm a capitalist, like I am, but it's not, when it gets to a certain point, you have staff around you and staff around them and everyone's working for you. And then you become sort of, when you disagree with someone, you get thrown out. if you disagree with the top dog, essentially. I mean, this describes a lot of people we know these days. That's what happens when they're in an echo chamber of people who work for them, whose livelihoods depend on them. And in that case, that there's two stories I push you to in the Wall Street Journal that finally got written, which was the drug use by Elon Musk. Self-medication is what it's going on. But the more important story wasn't that, because that's okay, he takes drugs, what a surprise, is the board that enables it. And they're all getting hundreds of millions of dollars not to do their job, because the amount of money they're getting, and then they start to party with him, so they can't be a board, and therefore everything he does is right. You know, it goes like that, like kind of thing. And so, you know, I take a little bit of what happened to them when they were kids. Larry Ellison had a terrible childhood. Steve Jobs was adopted, but although he ended up having very nice parents. But they all have some pain that they never sought therapy for, or any kind of, I don't care how you do therapy, they never came to grips with their pain.
In the book, you introduce a number of people that we know by name but don't know, but you do, and I wanted mm-hmm. to whip through some of them.
Sure.
Mark Zuckerberg greets you with, "I hear you think I'm an asshole."
Yes.
Which he would then prove over time.
Well, no, he's not an asshole. See, I say he's not an asshole. He's actually a nice guy. He behaves in asshole ways. That's different. I think you'd find him very lovely. He's hilarious. He is. He's actually, he's a very good father. He's a very good husband. So
you quote Evan Osnos, who I love, who talks about
New York
the move fast and break things. And he says the aim was to break things instead of change things or fix things or improve things. And you say Mark was not evil or cruel or malevolent. He was naive.
Yes.
Do you still believe that after all this time? Because everything is on I'm sorry. Is that
It's not
really?
I'm sorry. You have to listen to him really carefully, actually. I thought perhaps something had changed. He's had a lot of kids. I think he has three kids now. He's older. He's clearly older. He's aged, which makes a big difference, right? People like Mark Cuban used to be such a tech bro, and now he's fantastic. But he was terrible when I met him. He was like, "Ooh, I want a beer," and I was like, "No, thank you for that kind offer." But Mark has not evolved. No, he hasn't. And I think he's just got more deft at it. But what happened recently in Congress, where I think it was Josh Hawley, it might have been Tom Cotton. Was it Cotton? Whatever, they're both terrible. So he got up and was like, there were parents that had gotten hurt by social media, and they put up pictures of their kid. It was a very dramatic.
Right.
Was it Cotton?
Hawley.
Okay, sure, whatever. Him, that guy. They're the same people. They're the same ambitious fox. Sorry, whatever. I've spent time with them, and I can assure you they're exactly as advertised. So he made him apologize, which, you know, turn around what you've done to these people and apologize. And I was like, turn around at you. You could have made laws, and you just sit on your hands and tweet. Like, it's their problem. That said, welcome to Congress 2024, the freak show performative. Although I did love Biden's expression when he saw Marjorie Taylor Greene. That was the best thing. I wonder if he practiced it, but I don't think he did. I don't. I like, oh, he totally practiced. Like, look at her like she's crazy, which is easy. But he did the whole, like, it was like a spit take. Did you watch it?
Yeah. Seeing what I'm seeing? Yeah.
But it was so good, because it was really over the top, which is why I think he didn't mean to do it. Because you'd have been like that and then moved along. John Stewart said Biden has managed to bypass the troll that guards the podium. I love John Stewart, he's so funny. So he gets to make some turnaround. Let's set aside these terrible legislators here. Mark turns around and looks at them, and I saw in his face, I really did see in his face, because I know him, horror, like, oh no. Like, the pictures of the kids are it's very emotional with parents holding up pictures of their kids. And I saw him say, oh no, and then out of his mouth came, "I'm so sorry for what happened to you," which is not an apology. That's like me saying, "I'm so sorry it rained today," like as if I had anything to do with it. And so what he should have said, which would have been a real movement forward, was, "I'm so sorry for anything I've invented that's hurt you. And I don't know what to do about it, but I think it's time to do," you know, anything. He didn't even have to go that far. He'll never go that far. But he didn't acknowledge his responsibility in what had happened. At this point, he's so rich, then they can't sue him. So what is the cost, precisely? He cannot be sued. He cannot be fired. So what is the cost to him to acknowledge what? Zero. The cost is zero. So it was, you know, these poor parents should be able to sue him. Even if they lose, they should be able to sue him, but they can't. So I don't think he's changed.
As I was reading that chapter, I thought about some of the things you said about Steve Jobs, and I wrote down, how would Steve Jobs have designed and run Facebook? And I asked because she points out that he was incredibly talented as a designer, mm-hmm. but also was very thoughtful in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I wondered what the opposite would look like. What would a Facebook look like if somebody like that had designed it?
Well, they did do a social media site. Apple really didn't follow trends. It's not a trend, never has. It's always been doing its own thing. And one time, it's in the book, they created Ping, which was their social, which is terrible. And I told him so, and he knew it. He was like, oh, I knew it. Like, he couldn't even defend it, because it just was not their area of expertise. He wouldn't have done it. He always talked about, and I just saw his wife, he hated social media because of the business plan. He thought it attracted bad behavior. He felt like you couldn't design your way out of an advertising-based system that requires enragement to keep you occupied. And so he didn't like the business plan. So he never thought it. I don't think he would have designed it. And they made a little kind of limp attempt, but they got out of it right away. He closed that down quick because he knew it. Just there wasn't any. He, you know, there are some, like, okay, he based it on the music service. So people talking about music would have been a little nicer.
Right.
But, you know, in an instant, everyone would be arguing over Nicki Minaj, whatever, they'd be arguing over everything. Because it attracts disputation. The social media attracts, sometimes it's really funny. Like, I'm sorry, the Katie Britt stuff is so mwah, right? Not just because it's Katie Britt. If it was a Democrat, I'd go mwah, because that was a crazy, crazy performance. And the internet went to work, and it was so good. And you're like, nice, oh, that's funny. And surprisingly, except, well, she looked like a Stepford wife, so I don't. Wasn't that sexist either? You could have gone a real sexist direction, but it was just like, this is weird. This is weird, and they did. So when it works, it works. But often it degenerates into something super ugly. And just today, I put something. I think about this appearance or something on. I never go on Twitter now because it's such a toxic waste dump. And I put something up, and I've turned off my comments now because it used to be fine. I'm over on Threads. I don't. It's a pretty good platform if you want to put news out and stuff like that, and it's a much calmer platform. Maybe it won't be forever, but the way they're designing it actually mitigates some of the craziness because you can hide people. That's a really great thing. Like little things like that, mm-hmm. I can just hide people who say terrible things and get rid of them and get my name off of it. But you can't do that on Twitter easily. And so I put it up, and instantly there were all these trolls saying, I can't say it out loud. Like the thing Donald Trump likes to call the lawyer who beat him like a drum in the Eugene Carroll case. He immediately, all that, you this, you that. It was crazy. So there's no fixing it.
I think a lot of us are worried about 2024 and the election. Mm-hmm. Before, in 2016, a lot of people didn't know what was happening. They didn't understand the news.
Well,
2016, they didn't understand the news vert and how it was pumping things into their feed. Mm-hmm. Cambridge Analytica. I wonder this time, now that people know, mm-hmm. and they know, that will it make a difference that they realize that somebody is trying to tune them up, or no, it's going to work.
I think
again.
It just works. I think because it's the speed of it. Like if you architect something for, like Google, like Uber, you never linger on your Uber and have an argument with someone, right? Mm-hmm. You're just getting the car, right? It's essentially a utility. Google's the same way. You just like search for something, and it doesn't. There's no controversy there, except maybe how they put their own stuff ahead. That's different. Mm-hmm. That's a different problem. But you have, Google is designed for speed, accuracy, and context. Like you're looking for ADL, you get ADL, right? YouTube, on the other hand, which is owned by Google, if you search for ADL, you get anti-Semitic stuff instantly. And I used to say to the head of YouTube, I'm like, you know, there's this search service that happens to own you that perhaps you could do a better job of doing search, because I don't want to get anti-Semitic videos the minute. Because those platforms and Facebook and others are designed, not so much Instagram, is designed for speed, virality, and engagement. And that creates all hell broke loose when you do that. Because what's viral is typically hateful, or it makes you angry, or gets you to argue with people. And then within the system, which people don't realize, many years ago, There was Roseanne Barr, who's just really, what happened to her? She needs to be a lot of therapy. She's tweeted something about Valerie Jarrett. Remember? It was terrible what she said. And so all this anger create, I can't believe what she said, but then there was defenders of her. Free speech, and it's also true, like it was terrible what she compared her to an animal. And it went back and forth, all this yelling, right? And then a couple days later, Sam B, who was terrific, said something not nice about Ivanka Trump. Not nice, but she said it. And all these supporters of her and all these people who defended her started arguing on social media. And I had a firm look at who was doing that, where's the sources of this. They were bots working for all the same company. It was all the same bots talking to each other. So the bots took each side to generate anger. And then, and I wrote a story about this because I was like, you're getting made angry by computers. Like, that's what's making you angry. And they're on the same side. They're the same company. They're just taking a different side to create a traffic accident. And then humans piled on. And then humans were there. And it was really something to see. And so that's something people don't recognize. And when you get, sometimes I have a friend who works for the New York Times, and she's always responding. I'm like, that's a bot. Stop it. Like, she's like, in fact, I wrote this. And I was like, in fact, stop arguing with a bot. Like, you know, because first of all, her anxiety goes up and there's no winning with these people, right, essentially. But it's designed to, like, go down your cerebral cortex and make you crazy. And it's completely designed that way. It's designed to do it. And there's no other outcome except that when you use these things. So I'm worried, yes. But now we have AI, right? So this is what it could do. I spend a lot of time anticipating things, you know, like what's going to happen. Say you started to take videos and you just slightly made, you know, Biden's kind of, now he's Jolton Joe, according to Fox. Before he was weakened at Bernie's, but now he's Jolton Joe, whatever. Like, which one is it? Is he dead? Oh, he's not dead. Oh, sorry, you were wrong then. Like, it's kind of crazy. But say you take those videos and you slow them down a little bit, just slightly, imperceptibly. Right? Make him seem a little older than he is. Which is a concern for voters, a concern for both of them are old, right? But do that. Maybe you make Donald Trump seem a little more, if you're on that side. If you're against Donald Trump, maybe, well, it's very hard, make him seem crazier. But you know, you could do things. Or on the day of the election, you could say one of them's dead. You know, you could put it out very fast. And it would be very, well, people are voting. Mm-hmm. So the press will come back and fix it, but it takes a minute, right? It takes a minute for the mainstream press to do something. It just happened on my book tour where this was kind of somewhat funny, but it was not that funny, was on Amazon, they had fake Kara Swisher books instantly. As I started to rise in the rankings, there were all these pictures of me with really nice earrings and femmy hair. They're really crazy. You've got to go look at them. They're so funny. My mother is thrilled. But their books, like Tex Queen Bee, stings everybody. I was like, really? Okay. And their Amazon was selling them when you search for my name. These were AI generated books.
Did you just get a book full of nothing on the page?
No, it takes my work and squishes it up. Took my book and squished it up and spit it. It didn't want to do copyright. It did a copyright valuation, but I did it by ingesting it and vomiting back up. So the people who are buying them, thinking they're buying them, are losing money. They did it with Savannah Guthrie. They put a workbook next to her. She just did a book about God. We interviewed her this week about it. And they put a workbook that wasn't hers. And she was at a signing, and someone's like, her mom said, I'm going to buy your workbook. And she's like, I don't have a workbook. What are you talking about with this? Maybe she should. But that's the kind of thing that happens. So now all this stuff is going to happen that isn't you. They could take all your stuff and make you, even though it's not you. They will.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
You referenced your mom, and I talked to you about it a little bit backstage because you talk about it on the podcast.
I do.
Your mother's very conservative and pro-Trump, and you joke about
it. She wasn't.
I'm going to take that part back. She's very conservative.
No, she was. She is. Are you kidding? She's lunatic now. But she wasn't. I have a video of her where she's like, that charlatan, blah, 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 and then the propaganda did its work.
And in fact, she replayed your work back to you with you saying that's not true.
Yes.
And I was asking you about the distortion field because you obviously live with this all the time. And people are wondering, is there anything I can do to get through? People have lost friends. They've lost partners. They've lost neighbors. They've lost siblings. How do you deal with it? You understand this world so well, and if you can't even say, that's not my work you're talking about, you got it wrong, and she won't hear you, what do you do?
She eventually did hear me, but what happened was my mom, I did an interview with Hillary Clinton, and my mom called me like a couple days later, and she goes, oh, that Hillary Clinton. She's always saying bad things about people like us, like that thing, you know, like aggrieved, the aggrieved group that's constantly being aggrieved. I was like, what are you talking about? And she said this, and she said this, and said this. And I was like, really? And I heard words that she had said to me, Hillary Clinton, and I was like, Mom, that's my interview. She didn't say that. And my mom went, yes, she did. She absolutely said it. And I said, she absolutely didn't, because I'm your daughter, and I did the interview, and she didn't say it, you know, if you listen to it. And she's like, no, you're completely wrong. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm right, because I did the interview, you know. It went back and forth, and so I made her listen to it, and she did, and then she calls me back, and she goes, all right, she didn't say it, but her emails, literally the next sentence. And I was like, oh my God, she's a housewife from Chappaqua, leave her alone, let her retire, she doesn't running the world, and from the kitchen, speaking of kitchens, Katie Britt. She really believes it, and the same thing happened with COVID. It was a flu. It's a flu, Kara. I'm like, no, you're going to die of it. Like, it's a plague. My brother's a doctor. He was like, do not go out. He knew what it was, what was happening, and there would be millions of, I think it's 1.2 million in this country now. He knew that, and especially elderly people. And she's like, oh, it's the flu, because she had been reading stuff online and through Fox News and stuff like that. And I wrote a column about this for the New York Times, and Sean Hannity threatened to sue me, which was a great thing. Of course, he didn't, because he's such a chump. So.
You write about meeting Jeff Bezos, and the first word you think is feral.
Feral.
He is now the most, man
He's still
in
feral
the world.
With his new outfits.
And those bring people a lot of mirth. Like, what is going on with the cowboy?
I like it. I got to say, I knew him when he didn't. I mean, he was so slight, I could have beaten him up, you know, easily. And I think I probably still could. But he was so different. It's really funny to watch. You know what? He seems happy. Let's just let him have it.
We'll leave it. But, you know, you talk about people like Bill Gates, who eventually, after he's made all his money, seems to start thinking about legacy.
Yes.
What am I going to do with the foundation? Mm-hmm. Bezos has done some stuff in space. He's bought the Washington Post.
Earth Fund,
Do you think he thinks about legacy like a Bill Gates does?
No. And, you know, there's just a great story, actually, in the New York Times by David Fahrenthold, who used to work for the Washington Post. He did the same thing with Trump charities, but he just did it with Elon Musk charities. Mm-hmm. He's giving no money to anyone, and he created this charity, put a ton of money in, got a huge tax break, and he's giving it to, like, the local taco stand in the town he's building in Texas. It's like, you know, to help them. You know, it's just crazy. It's crazy. I mean, it's just such a scam, really. I think eventually a lot of these people are ungenerous, I would say, you know, as people, and so, you know, Gates is a different story, because Melinda was an important part of it, and still is, by the way. They're still working together, even though they're getting a divorce, or gotten one. He's getting remarried, by the way. But I know, right? There he goes. Ladies, you missed him. same thing with Rupert Murdoch, man.
God bless her. Bless your heart on that one.
She's lovely. I've met her. She's lovely. I can't remember.
But she calls Rupert Uncle Satan.
I do.
What are you going to give him as a wedding present?
I know. Uncle Satan, nothing. I know a lot of... He's a terrible... I have to tell you, social media, gerrymandering, and Rupert Murdoch are the reasons our country is so... the three things together. If I had to pick.
And then there's Elon.
Right. Well, let me get to Jeff. Anyway, Jeff Bezos, no, he's not. Eventually he will, I guess. He's got a lot of kids. Maybe they'll do it. Maybe they'll do something. Obviously, his ex-wife has shown him how to do it. Mackenzie Scott is fantastic. Let me say, I know her. I haven't talked to her in a very long time, but she was terrific then. And I love how she's just like, you get $10 million. She's not even like, I like Gates, the Gates Foundation is doing, and I like it, but it's so technical, and we're going to do this. And she's just like, you seem nice, $10 million, right? She just is like, Planned Parenthood, $100 million, go for it. Like, she just does it, and it's not a lot of fuss and muss, and I kind of enjoy. All the other rich people are like, you know, it's not very organized. I'm like, everyone loves her. And they're like, it's not very organized. And like, again, everyone loves her. She's doing it. She's just giving her money and not like making it into a performance. She just is You never see her. You don't, like, she's just giving her away money. And I think it's such a burn on her ex-husband. Whatever.
You get into Elon and what he was like in the beginning and the devolution over time.
Yes.
And in fact, I had literally written in the book, is he going through an episode, a mental episode, or you know, or
today
is this
he is.
Howard Hughes?
He did 20 tweets about how white people are in trouble. It was crazy. I was like, I don't think so.
Sure they are. Howard Hughes and just eccentricity. And then you look at, or is this a mental break? What are we looking at?
Well, Howard Hughes had mental problems. I think Elon's talked about them. I'm not giving a fresh perspective. He's talked to me. He diagnosed himself as bipolar, but I mean, I don't think you're supposed to do that, but he did. But he's clearly got bipolar tendencies or something. He shifts his personality rather drastically in a 3-second thing. There's something happening with him. He was always like that, very, just off. He needs some help.
What's attractive to him about the sort of hateful side of the right wing stuff?
I'll tell you where it started. It was interesting. Well, two places. He was always had these elements in him. You know, he was always kind of juvenile. Mm-hmm. There was always the penis and boob joke. Like, and you'd be like, oh, all right, fine, get it out of your system. And, you know, so often he'd make one of those stupid jokes, and I'd be like, and you're 42 years old. Okay, time to move on from the boob jokes, right? Like, and, you know, I was literally, I think at the time, one of my kids was 12. I was like, my 12-year-old doesn't do those anymore, so let's move on. Like, ooh, I'm farting. That's the kind of thing he'd like. No, really, that's what it would be like. And you'd be like, we're getting through that. So that was a small part of his personality. Then he had quirkiness and interesting, like, he'd come up with, like, he did one interview with me where he talked about our world in a simulation, you know, that this isn't real, none of this, that we live in it. A lot of tech people believe we're in a simulation. They always go, there's a less than zero chance we're in a, they love to do it that way. But essentially they believe that we're in a simulation and that this is a video game. And if you believe that, it makes sense a little bit because he thinks he's Ready Player One. And so he can say whatever he wants and it doesn't matter. So if you believe we're in a video game, it makes sense what's happening to him. The third thing is with mental health. That he has some autistic issues. You know, there's a lot of people in tech who have that. I'm not a doctor, but you can tell, like you can see it, that he's very hard time when he gets a reaction. You run into it a lot in tech people, or you do. You just do. So they have socially awkward is how I look at it. Because I'm not a doctor, but they don't clock a room really well. And it's hard for them. Their responses are often off to what you just said to them. So that's, you can see them in interviews do that. And then I think being so wealthy is a problem, like a huge problem, because he has enablers around him all the time and minions that agree with him violently about everything he says. Oh, that was a good one, boss. That was a funny one, boss. And that happens. And then I think it's very clear he's having a good time with himself. And he's self-medicating. And then there's at the very heart of him is just an asshole. Like he's just one of those people who just really feels like he's better than you. And he can say whatever he wants and you're nothing. And so it's very easy on him to junk on immigrants. He's an immigrant, FYI. Trans people.
He has a trans child.
Whom I know. Like it's terrible. It's terrible what he's done. How could you do that? He dunks on, you know, I think, you know, I'm not blaming him for the sins of his grandfather. His grandfather was a horrible racist, like a professional racist, like did it for a living and had to leave Canada, go to South Africa. I mean, they kicked him out of there. Just his family's history is really, and again, you don't have to be your family. I don't necessarily, but boy, is he living their life, you know, he's moving into their zone rather quickly. And then the sense of aggrievement is so massive if you don't agree with him, like the aggrievement. So I don't know, some people go down those alleys and they don't come back. And, you know, they become, you know, you can see it when people do, in terrorists, they become, you know, you sort of like, how did that happen?
You devolve.
And the other thing is, the last thing is he gets constant reinforcement from all these fans, right? And so it becomes this thing. And it can start with a little thing, like his Biden hate started from Biden didn't invite him to this summit, this EV summit, right? Or autonomous EV summit. And he invited like GM and the others. And There's a simple reason. He's a non-union shop, and Biden's a union. Like, he couldn't, and it was political. He called me furious. I can't believe he didn't buy. I am the center of EV. And I was like, you are. He is. There's no question he's the pioneer who got it going with Tesla. But things change. Like, so what? And I was like, what do you care if he invited you? He can't invite you. You're non-union. Don't be stupid. Like, how dare he? I am the greatest, you know. And I was like, and that has germinated into this anti-Biden hatred that is just, but that's where it started. He got picked last at basketball.
He's the one that, more than any of them, I wonder, how does this end? Like, you expect an explosion.
Badly.
Mark Cuban, will he run for president one day?
He told me yesterday he wouldn't. I saw him yesterday in Texas. No, I don't think he will. I think he thinks it's funny. He wouldn't be bad. I mean, come on, right now, the bar is so low. It's, rather than have a failed business person do it, or a successful one would be nice, if we're going to get one. He's very smart. I like Mark. It would be great to get him in a cabinet position or something, or do, like, head up, and the stuff he's doing about cost plus drugs is interesting, like, head up some special way to bring drug cut, like that. That's how I'd pull him in to an administration if Biden wins. I would pull him in and get him to do something like that, because he's a very innovative person and people really like him, and he can break through bureaucratic walls pretty easily. Something like that I could see him doing. I don't see him running.
Where does tech go depending on who wins this election? What would it look like under Biden? What will it look like under Trump?
Well, interestingly, Trump did lead the anti-TikTok thing. Now he's for TikTok because Jeff Yass from the Club for Growth, he's trying to get the money from Jeff Yass. And so he's suddenly like, blah, 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 blah. I listened to him about it, like, free speech. I'm like, but you did an executive order to ban TikTok. How did that, because it turns out Kellyanne Conway is one of the lobbyists for them. Well, what a surprise. And these people, I always say, there's an expression I use with some rich people, which is, you're so poor, all you have is money. She's leading that effort, so she's somehow convinced him it's stupid on his part, because he was right about some of this TikTok stuff. We'll see. I don't know what he's going to do. He seems to be embraced certain. He's now attacking Facebook, which actually supported him. Like, not Mark was very, not supportive, but he didn't oppose him. And I don't know
why. That seemed very odd.
Oh, he just attacked, he called Mark Schmuckerberg? Ooh, how clever, what a burn. Like, it's so stupid. It's so stupid. Like, I can't believe we don't think this is stupid. This is stupid. It's like a high school with the jerk who was always the jerk. We all knew to be a jerk is doing this. But, you know, I think probably, look, nobody's done a very good job at all. There's no legislation. Biden has tried, but nothing has passed. People like Amy Klobuchar and others get blocked almost continually. I just did an interview with Marguerite Vestager this morning, who is the one who's fining Apple $2 billion in Europe. She's a badass. She's done laws, fines, everything else. But it's from Europe. She can only enforce things in Europe. And they hate her. I love it. I'm always like, I'm not going out with Marguerite. They're like, oh. Like,
what does it take to get regulation here? It feels like there has to be a horrible inflection point. But I
there
don't
has
know
been
what
a horrible. It's called the insurrection. It's called the insurrection. Come on.
What would it take for them to finally say, we've got it, finally, it's time for regulation?
There isn't anything. The money is so
we are
vast.
Where we are.
No, we had, we fought Standard Oil. We broke up AT&T. This has happened. We've had a history. The railroad conglomerates, the cigarette manufacturers, it's happened. It's just, what's happened in this time is this is an industry that's gotten so powerful at a time when politics is totally dysfunctional. And so it's managed to get out of regulation because our politicians can't agree on anything. And so it's like they've gone through up a lane, an opening, and they're going, they're gone. And especially with generative AI and everything else that's coming, all the companies are unaccountable completely, and they control the entire system. It's all private. AI is private. There's no government involvement in it, really, hardly. And they own the internet, which we paid for as taxpayers. Like, they own everything. And so they have unlimited money. They're out of reach of liability. You can't sue them. Like, that's crazy.
That's insane.
That's correct. That's insane, right? All joking aside, they can't walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and get away with it, but they kind of do that every day, like, in some way. And so there's nothing, there's no liability, there's no accountability, there's no regulatory guardrails, and I think at some point, like, what will have to happen? That's what, when years ago, I wrote a column in the New York Times, and I said in it, I said, if Donald Trump loses the election, he's going to say the election's a lie, and he's going to say it over and over again, and it's going to go up and down the right-wing ecosystem, and then he's going to turn around and ask his followers to stop it in real life. That's what I wrote. I wrote a column saying this. I wrote it in 2019. Okay, like it wasn't hard to predict what was going to happen here, and these companies don't feel like having any consequences or anticipating consequences because that gets in the way of their capitalist jam, right? And so, and again, I like capitalism, but why are they doing it at our expense? That's my feeling. Like who had to pay for the cleanup of the Capitol? American citizens. Who bought the internet? American citizens. So their businesses seem really profitable, but it's because they don't pay their weight. It's like the opiate manufacturers. Sure, they're but we pay for all the dead people, all the people on drugs, we pay for the crime, et cetera.
We're getting close to the end, so if you've got questions, think about them. And you brought up AI earlier, which mm-hmm. a lot of people, it just paralyzes them with fear. They feel yeah. like the machine learning is going to kill us. Yeah. There's something in the book that someone explains to you that I thought this would be a great place to talk about it. Mm-hmm. The difference between post-tragic, pre-tragic, and naive optimism thinking around AI. Will you explain what that is?
That's Tristan Harris, and he worked at Google, and he's done a lot pre this about the systems, which he calls a casino. It's a casino. You're stuck in it. It's addictive, it's necessary, and it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous, which means you can't avoid it. It's not like you can say, I'm done with the cigarettes. You can't be done with the internet. You can't be done with digital. You can't. Everything is going to be digitized. And so what he was talking about is that we have this, I think naive optimism is not where we are. We know we've seen what's happened with the lesser, we've seen what the atom bomb did. Wait till you see what the nuclear bomb does. And that's how you should look at it. This is a nuclear bomb. And it could be nuclear energy, which it can be. I know it's controversial, but nuclear energy is actually a lot safer than people realize. When it's paired with a nuclear bomb, that's why. I mean, it was interesting. I did an interesting series of interviews about this recently. Here's where the technology itself is, in a weird way, benign, right? It can go either way. It's either a tool or a weapon. What I do know is that every single technology has been turned into a weapon. Like, all of them have. There's not one that hasn't. It also can be a tool. I just did an interview with Steve Jobs' son, who's doing all this cancer research and trying to make cancer non-lethal. AI is a critical part of that. Healthcare, climate change, we need AI to help us figure out how to mitigate the terrible effects of climate change. All kinds of great things could happen. Education, you could just imagine efficiencies that we do, figuring out all kinds of things that, like, medical could be just mind-blowing what could happen. It really is, using these technologies. All this data trapped everywhere that it could pull out that the human brain can't do. And so it's going to be something special, like building things. Just, you can't even imagine where it's going. And at the same time, you could imagine, because you've watched science fiction, you've seen The Terminator. The problem is, it doesn't want to kill us. Someone wants to kill us. So my whole premise in the book was that Paul Virilio quote, which was, when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck. We have a lot of ships, a lot of shipwrecks, and no lighthouses. Why? Because they don't want lighthouses. They don't care about tech companies on the whole don't care about the shipwrecks. It's not their concern, even though they created the conditions of the shipwreck, because they don't have to pay for it. And so my whole premise is, if everything's going to be digitized and technology is coming, and it's going to, it's inevitable. It's not even like, stop pretending it's not coming. What can we do to plus the positives, of which there are many, and mitigate the negatives, of which there are plenty, but they can be mitigated? And it's not going to be perfect, but you definitely can mitigate it. Like, hey, world, I mean, this is, I ran into Tony Blinken at something. I'm like, can you agree on drone killer robots? Can we agree on that we should maybe call them illegal around the globe? He's like, I agree with that. I'm like, excellent. We're making progress. Like, there's six things we can agree on that we don't want to have happen. But we aren't going to avoid job changes. We're not going to avoid bad players. And the person I'm not scared of AI. I'm scared of people who use AI. That's who I'm, that person who's coming, who is going to use it. That's who I'm, and they're going to use it. It has to be used because it's so powerful, because that's what bad people do, is use things like this. And especially dictators. They love them. They love AI.
to end, you've watched this place for 30-some years, wondering what the future is going to look like. You talk about the difficulties that face women and the difficulties that face people of color in a world that's often very white and very male.
They're very discriminatory towards white people. Literally, go look at Elon's tweets. You're literally like,
Would you tell a young woman, would you tell a young kid of color to go to Silicon Valley?
I would, because this is where the power is. Like, if you want to be part of this, you really do have to have these skills. It can't be relegated. And I think a lot of people don't think this is, you know, right now there's all this debate over diversity, equity, inclusion. Let's just walk through that for a second. Besides the fact that we have to listen to a billionaire like Bill Ackman, who has no expertise, tell us about diversity. Give me a fucking break. What is that? I was threatening to go on Twitter and write a 90-part series about hedge fund investing, because I know zero. But like, what does he know? He's a rich guy who gave money to Harvard. That's it. That's his qualification. That's it. He's a loudmouth rich guy who went to Harvard. Let's put that aside. Diversity? So what's the opposite? Being homogeneous. That's always a plus when societies are trying to die, being homogeneous. Like, come on. Equity? Oh, unfairness is one of my favorite things. Let's be unfair. That's the opposite of equity. It's the opposite, unfairness. Oh, okay, I'm for that. Like, and then inclusion, exclusion. Let's exclude people. It just is so not the American way. It's crazy. You know, I sort of, when people are backing away from it, because now we're gonna have to change the words because these stupid anti-woke people, fine, whatever, they won on that one. But what's the opposite of woke? It's asleep. Like, seriously, I told this to that Vivek Ramaswamy. I was like, asleep is the opposite, you dumbass. Like, you know, don't let them do that. Like, that's the thing, is you have to really push back on them. And so I would say, go there, because that's where the power is. Like, don't avoid it and push your way in, because it's yours. Like, it doesn't have to be theirs. One of the big stories, I wrote a lot about this. Either this small group of homogeneous people have to be the smartest people in the world and they're better than us, or they're just wrong. They think it's a meritocracy, and it's a mirrortocracy. It is not a meritocracy. And so if we start to think like that and get in there and take it, like, it's out. They're not going to give it up. Nobody gives up power. So you need to get in there and take it and start to be innovative and create things so that they don't get to. And listen, many of them are not malevolent. Many. And that's the problem, right? Malevolent people I can deal with. It's the non-malevolent that's problematic. Anyway.
I think you can see on that the happy book note, is a bestseller.
I really like the Vision Pro. So. I do.
I know. You would never do it, Kara, but I think you should run for president.
You don't really?
It would be an entertaining 4 years. And a better 4 years.
Yeah.
So now it is your opportunity.
I think I'll just be an irritant to billionaires. And that's a really good goal. You know, by the way, I was born in Philadelphia, everyone.
Of course.
Philly. Does that make me a Philly girl?
Yeah. We'll get you a cheesesteak at the end of this.
Okay.
Hi, Kara. I know you're often asked about Scott.
Yeah.
And I love Scott and I love Pivot and the Exchange, but I wanted to ask you about Naima, who's you've had exchanges with on, and I think that chemistry has been amazing. Can you tell me a bit about how you guys started working together and why it works so well?
Sure. Well, Naima is the producer of the show. She's the producer of On. She worked with me at let me give a credit to the whole staff. It's a group effort, but she's the executive producer of the show. And she runs the show, and she's great. And so we had a group of people at the New York Times who were really great and wanted to do new and innovative things. It was a little harder there because they like to run. I don't begrudge the New York Times. It's their system. And so they were a little more innovative, including Naima, and she's great. And we did the Vestager show today. So she's the executive producer, and she does a great job. She's really great. And we also have a great staff of Pivot. And one of the things and by the way, a lot of people who work for me at Recode have gone on to a lot of, like, Mike Isaac and Kurt Wagner just wrote a book on Twitter. These are all people who we found and mentored their careers. And one of the things that we think is important is, like, putting people in positions of power to mentor them to go forward. And we like people leaving us. We actually love when people leave us. And so we try really hard to find people who love, like Naima and many others who've worked for me, who like to be innovative and like to mix things up. And Scott is Scott. I don't know what to tell you. I discovered him, and I take the blame. Yesterday, I was going to show you that we won the iHeartRadio News Award. Right? Of course, that's how he celebrates. He like shows off his he went big guns. I was like, I wasn't there, and I was like, oh God, Scott. Yes, he did. I haven't heard from him. Thank you for asking. You'll know on the next show what happened. I think he may have not done it. He hasn't called me, so I think maybe he chickened out because he doesn't want to become self-actualized in any way, because good God, that would be a years-long therapy process. Well, I do, too. I'll text him later.
Okay. I have a question.
You know, actually, there's some really interesting things happening with all those psychedelics.
Yeah.
It seems like a ridiculous tool of billionaires. There's some really fascinating stuff going on in Johns Hopkins and all around in Oregon, especially around PTSD. It's really, we've got to, including LSD, it's really, everyone's like, huh. And I'm like, no, actually, there's really promising. Not perfect, and people should be trying all these things. I mean, medically. Done medically, because it
yes.
could really replace a lot of things.
My question for you was, I love what you said about pushing your way in.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been on Bill Maher's show, or...
I'm about to be on it.
And
I have been on it, too.
Will you be unrelenting, please, like you are right here? Because
you think? I don't
know.
Him
and maybe. This other demon, Lex Friedman,
oh,
have you been on his show
no,
yet?
No, he hasn't invited me on.
I wish someone like you
he talks would a lot.
Hold them accountable because
yeah,
he's
somewhat
need.
Of a lapdog of an interviewer. In fact, that's exactly what he is. Why am I saying someone he is? But what a giant brain you have, Bill Ackman. I was like, that's a real question. How about that? How did you get so smart? What was it? Was it Wheaties? You know, that's the kind of question level you get. He reveres entrepreneurs, so he can do his own little trip. That's fine. With Bill, he's a more complex figure, I would say. I've been on his show many times, actually. He keeps inviting me back, which is kind of, we had a show where he was talking about Mark Zuckerberg and he went after his looks. You know, Mark had that white stuff on his face when he was doing his weird hydrofoil thing. And, you know, he started going on like, well, Kara, what about his looks? And I said, are we really going to talk about what he looks like rather than what he's doing? And he was like, well, and I was like, because you're not so great to look at either. And so... So he was good. Yes, I'm going to be in the seat. I'm not going to be on the panel. He's going to do the interview with me, which is good. Bill is a complicated figure. And so my wife was like, don't go on that fucking show. And I was like, I'm going on that show. So I think he's more complicated. That's all. I tend to talk to people I disagree with a lot.
Hi, Kara. Hi. And welcome back to the motherland.
Thank you.
When in your career did you become aware of yourself becoming a public figure? And what were you thinking at that time?
Oh, right away. Immediately. When I was in college, I went to Georgetown, and I wrote for the Hoya, I wrote columns, and I won the journalism award my freshman year, which is called the Bun Award, if you believe it. I had the best buns, I guess. I won it, and it was usually given to seniors, and it caused a hubbub, at small newspapers at a college. The politics are rich. There's a lot of going on. And they were lost their mind. I was like, of course I want it. I'm the best. So then, really, I was really good at journalism right from the get-go. I was. That's the facts.
You talk about being concerned about people who wield AI. Who besides Sam Altman gives you hope in the valley?
You want to know what I think of Sam?
And
he said, who else gives you hope?
If he gives you hope, or who else gives you hope?
You know, I think people are putting too much on Sam in lots of ways. There's a lot of players here, right? But he's interesting. He's a gay man. I met him when he was 19, when he did Looped, which was a failed company, and followed his career for a long time. I think he's thoughtful. He's a little, he certainly, one thing that I look for in a lot of people is they have a sense of history. He's widely read. I know it sounds dumb, but he does understand. He's not, by Nate, being a gay man, he's not going to fit quite in with the tech bros, right? But he is a little bit of that, too. He's highly aggressive. He's very entrepreneurial. He likes money, like they all do. You can't deny it. I think putting the power in his hands is still not good. Everyone's imperfect. And what I don't like is there's this sort of meme that goes around, this techno-optimism, which is being pushed by Marc Andreessen, like, everything is great. What are you talking about? And then there's techno-negatives who are also bad. I had someone pretty high up in that company, not on the board saying, if we don't stop Sam Altman, humanity is doomed. And I was like, are you kidding me? Stop it. Like, stop it. It just doesn't make sense. So what we got, it doesn't really matter. Why should we let them run it? We should have government guardrails. Like, why do we even have to have that argument, right? So, I mean, he's going to be a trillionaire, but okay. But, you know, I'm just saying, why is it around him? He shouldn't be making those. I don't think he thinks he should be making those decisions. But I think as a capitalist, and he has love shareholders, he's going to want to block any regulation. It's just, in their at this point, you know, everyone's like, I can't believe Facebook did that. I'm like, it's a public company in a capitalist society. That's their constituents are shareholders, like it or not. It's not their job to regulate themselves. They like it. Of course they do, because they make more money, but they're money makers. The first line of the book is really pretty much the whole book. You don't have to read it. So it was capitalism after all. Like, it was. Like, can you imagine an insurance company executive coming up to you and going, you know what I'm here for is world peace. Or a banker. All I want to do is bring people of all colors and races and genders together in one. Like, the banker doesn't say that. I want to make, give me the money. Like, so I don't expect them to be anything but what they are. What I don't expect is for them to make determinations about big social issues that are should be done by, as flawed as they are elected. We elect those people. That's our, and then ultimately, it's on us, right? That's the thing. So, I don't know. I don't blame them for being the people they are.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So Elon talks about having a net positive impact during his lifetime, and I've heard that argument a lot from the tech moguls. So my question is, would you rather live in a world with these folks living in it or not? Like, and should we encourage?
Why is that the question? I'm curious. I'm gonna challenge you here, because really, yeah. Like, it's either them or us or this and that. It's not the way it is. Why can't we live with them? Some of them who've been amazing. And also have rules around them. I just like it's like the them are the reductiveness of our public discourse has gotten to a point. It's so not life is nuanced. Like anyone who has children knows this, right? Yeah. Life is complex. Life is nuanced. And saying net positive, well, okay, cars are a net positive, but we're about to choke on ourselves. But like now they're not. Like things change, and so I think we have to be sophisticated enough, and I think we can be at the heart. Not to have to pick and choose, like, you know, is the world a better place for Elon Musk? I guess so. He has pushed forward electric vehicles. Does he really need to turn up the heat on divisiveness in a way? Because he's the richest. No, he's not the richest. Now Jeff, enjoyable Jeff, is having his moment. But so, I'm saying, you see what I'm saying, correct?
Yeah, so who's a good one? Who's a good them? Like, and who characterizes it if they're good or not?
None. You have a whole chapter.
Yeah, I have a whole chapter of people I like. Okay. This is a real short one, here's what I like. Nobody's anything. Like, everybody has flawed. I don't know how old you are, but you will learn that lesson pretty fast. And except for children, and they are great. My 2-year-old's kind of a pain in the ass these days. He breaks everything. My 4-year-old is perfect. She's amazing. But I think who's good? People who have evolved, who have changed and evolved. That's what I like. I like to see it. You see someone like Mark is someone. He's evolved. He's really evolved. I know it sounds crazy. Evan Spiegel, the Snapchat founder, he was such a jerk. And he has changed over time. He has changed and improved. He admits mistakes. He acts like an adult. And what I do is I differentiate between what I call adult toddlers who are stuck in a permanent stasis of being juvenile and those who take their responsibility seriously. And there's a ton of those. Tim Cook is I have issues with them about China, out the yin yang, but he can discuss them with me, like as an adult would, you know. Again, there's a lot of them. There's tons and tons and tons of leaders who can have a discussion. Someone who just left Congress today, let me give you someone who's in politics, Ken Buck. Ken Buck, I know, there's a lot leaving. There's a lot of, the good ones are all leaving. I do not agree with Mike Gallagher on many. We've had lots of set-tos about gay issues. But boy, is he a smart guy. He's a smart legislator. He's really interesting. He's thoughtful. He's served our country. He's lots of things. He's leaving. Ken Buck, who stood up, and he's so conservative. I can't believe I hang around with Ken Buck, but I do. I try to find common ground with someone like that. And he's, you know, he has all kind of whack things I don't agree with, but because he's a conservative. I'm obviously not a conservative, but we find compromise together. He's the one leaving Congress right now. He's leaving next week because he's had it. He's just like, stop with the election lies. Stop with this nonsense. Stop with the fealty to Trump in that side. That takes a lot to do that. Like, Did I ever think I'd agree with Liz Cheney? Never did I think I would agree with Liz Cheney, but here we are, right? Here we are. And so you have to see what I don't like, and I'll tell you, I really don't like this from the liberal side, is when someone like that does make a change, like a Liz Cheney, when there's a higher issue, we go, no, but but you can't like them because they used to this. I'm like, you know what? I can like them because right now they're doing the right thing. Right now, maybe later when everything settles down, we can start fighting again about the real things. But at this moment, we tend to reject people who progress in some fashion. And that can't happen because then you're intolerant on either side. And that's so that's what I say. Anyway, who's the good one? Who's the good one? Who's a laugh riot? I'm trying to think of who's funny. Cubes is probably the funniest. He's really funny. He's just like he is on TV. He's just like that. And he's a good man. He's a good man. Let me think of a woman, because there's so few women in tech right now. Dr. Fei-Fei Li. Oh, she's fantastic. She's so smart. She was one of the earliest AI researchers. She is amazing. And she takes a real, not a middle ground, but she's very like, this is good, this is bad. You owe a debt of gratitude to her, and you don't know her name, and she's amazing, and she's starting a new AI company. But someone like that, those are the kind of people. Fei-Fei Li, I did an interview with her, Dr. Fei-Fei Li. She's at Stanford, but she started ImageNet, which was, it sounds dumb, but that's a cat. She was the one who started it. She was at Google at the time, I think, where you looked at a picture and it said that's a cat. The computer learned how to say that's a cat. It was really important. She did very important work on early AI, and I think she's just the kind of people you want in tech with responsibility, maturity, very interesting background, and she sort of came from China, and she supported her parents, not very wealthy. She came, an immigrant who's worked her way, and just really a quality, just a thoughtful quality. You just want thoughtfulness at this point, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Quality's good, too.
Right, yeah. Anyway, that's
all
it.
Right. All right. Thank you all for coming out.
Thank
Carol
you.
Will be signing books upstairs. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/author-events.